Congratulations, you're listening to Podcast Rebellion.
Welcome to Podcast Rebellion, everyone. This is JUCO All-American, joined as always by Whiskey Wednesday. We are talking about the A&M game. This is just a reaction pod. We don't have a ton of time, but felt like we needed to have something. And gosh, what a great game to react to. Obviously, a three-point win. You had predicted a win. I had predicted a loss. So you were right and I was wrong. I think you thought we would dominate. I thought we would really struggle a lot with their pass rush, which we did at times, but they only got one sack. Jackson Dart did an awesome job of kind of getting rid of the ball. But yeah, now I am officially, or Ole Miss is 2-1 in games that I predict they will lose this season. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, surprising that Ole Miss won. I know I predicted it, and I predicted kind of a big win, but just the tempo of the game. Well, I guess not the tempo in terms of, you know, play speed and stuff like that, but just the way that the game went was not conducive to an Ole Miss victory. We got a ton of bad breaks. Just hold on. Stupid dog is whining. Let me let her outside real quick.
That's fine. I kind of thought that those bad breaks would be too much to overcome. Now, obviously, when they happened, Ole Miss was up 14-0, which is not the worst possible score to give up a blocked kick that's returned for a touchdown, but also not ideal. So, it was 14-7 when it could have been 17-7. But weird turn of events, that sort of thing happens sometimes, and this team was able to weather it. I mean, a 10-point swing, and they just marched right down the field again and scored a touchdown to kind of show you, like, we're not done. You know, this is not the momentum swing that it could be, right? Like, because that the kick that was returned for a touchdown, the block kick returned for a touchdown, if Ole Miss had gone 3-and-out and then A&M had scored a touchdown on their next drive, like, ugh, that's getting rough, you know? But they just immediately answered and scored a touchdown, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, if there was some stat for how the offense performs when they absolutely have to respond, you'd have to think that we'd do pretty well in that statistic. The offense has definitely gone cold at times in a way that it's really frustrating, but when they have to score, they do,
right?
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, well, I guess you could make a case for another person, but to me, Trey Harris is obviously the player of the game. He just went crazy. It was his best game. He won every single contested catch and just made A&M look foolish. Gosh, what a great receiver. Like, I think that we all kind of knew he was really good, but to me, this was a game that just made you go, like, oh, okay.
Yeah, to do it against a team with such elite talent really solidifies the kind of year that he's having, because I don't know, you could look back at his stat line by game and still say, like, oh, that first game where he scored four touchdowns kind of skews his production, but
right, Mercer, yeah,
it just doesn't matter. He's been playing beat up. He's been playing games where Jackson Dart is not having the best game. He's been playing games where, you know, there's hardly any other healthy receivers to throw to, and it doesn't matter. Like, so, I mean, yeah, I think he's easily the player of the game.
I don't think it's any coincidence that the one Ole Miss loss is a game when Trey Harris couldn't play. I mean, no. I think he had like one red zone possession where they tried to get him in and see what he could give him, but he just wasn't, you know, he didn't play against Alabama. And gosh, it's so, I mean, I'm happy with the way the season has gone. But it is frustrating thinking back that, you know, this team just couldn't really get anything going. against Alabama, and if you had Trey Harris in there, I know it was a 14-point win, or 14-point loss, I should say, but I don't know. Like, he might have made a 14-point difference.
Yeah, you combine him with Caden Prescorn and the impact he has on the running game. I guess Prescorn kind of gave it a go against Alabama, but...
Yeah, I don't remember him playing much, though.
Yeah. Yeah, if you combine the two player, you know, those two players and their impact, that's a game we definitely like to see again.
Yeah. Jackson Dart, obviously a great overall performance in terms of production. He had, let's see, 300 and I'm loading it. He had 387 yards passing, a 95.9 QBR. That is pretty good.
Yeah.
And A&M was statistically, you know, one of the top three or four defenses in the country entering this game. Or, excuse me, one of the top three or four defenses in the SEC entering this game. Maybe number one. but I think that, like, what makes... how you define a number one defense is kind of like subjective, but they were really good and really talented, I should say. And he just shredded them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not like A&M's defense played particularly badly. No. There were a few kind of wide open receptions that were, you know, good schemes and things like that. But Dart and Harris, you know, had to combine for a lot of spectacular efforts to have the production that they did. And, you know, Dart was under pressure all the time, hit all the time. It's hard to believe that, are you sure he was only sacked once? I feel like there are at least a couple of times, like my critique of his play would be that he kind of clammed up and swallowed the ball a couple times.
Sacked once.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. And I think Ole Miss only had one sack on Max Johnson that was on the last drive in the fourth quarter. How hard is that to believe, as much as both of those quarterbacks were just pummeled?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. They were just hit so many times.
Yeah. I mean, and both offensive lines were regarded as relatively porous in pass pro going into this game. You know, we talked about the stats headed into the game last week, but I want to say that Ole Miss's offensive line gave up like the 30 something most sack percentage, and Texas A&M was around there as well. So both were on, you know, when there are dropbacks, both were, you know, likely, more likely than normal to give up sacks, and they did fine. And both of those quarterbacks got the ball away. I mean, there were two passes. Passes is like even a funny word to use. There were two times that Jackson Dart put the ball in the air and you just went, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then it hit the ground. Because it was up for grabs and a duck because he was hit while releasing it or, you know, something like that. And then it just fell harmlessly, which was pretty fun. Now, what did not fall harmlessly was Max Johnson's pick to John Saunders in the end zone. That was a pretty fun one.
Yeah. John Saunders, he was a guy that I kind of tabbed as potentially super important to this defense over the offseason. And that certainly turned out to be the case. He maybe had a slow start in terms of really standing out, but has what, three picks now, I think.
I think that's right.
Mostly, huh?
I think that's right. Three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they've all been in like pretty clutch situations, and he generally has a lot of tackles, and I think generally, I don't know, he's played fantastic. I think him and Trey Washington and Dejon Harris have really, really, I don't know, their play has really elevated the defense to a level that I didn't think they would get to this year. Not that they haven't had their problems, but the emergence of those three guys has been, in my opinion, the storyline of the defense this year.
Yeah, I mean, I had pinpointed safety as a real problem area headed into the year. And if you had told me that, you know, Aishim Young was kicked off the team mid to late season, then I would have said, oh, I guess the defense was terrible.
Yeah. And then Teha Young has done very little.
Yeah. I mean, he's still a worthwhile piece. I mean, I'm happy that he's on the team, that kind of player, you know, but yeah, not in terms of like a ton of excellent production at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Another thing that happened on defense, Chris Graves played a good bit. And that was,
I saw that, yeah.
That was interesting. You know, I mean, he's been a player that has been slowly worked in. And I haven't watched the game again. So I haven't had a chance to kind of do the things that would allow me to do yet. I'm going to go on. I will be on a very long flight on Tuesday evening. And one of the things I'm going to do is download the game and watch it. And then try to sort of glean some insights that may be helpful and cool. But we'll see. But anyway, Chris Graves, you know, just seeing a freshman, because he's a redshirt freshman, I believe, right? I think that's right.
Yes, he's a true freshman.
Seeing a redshirt freshman being worked in more and more now and playing on a, you know, pretty good defense. And we'll talk about the defense overall in just a minute. But I think it's really encouraging. You know, Ole Miss loses DeAndre Prince and Zamari Walton and doesn't really have a lot. Like DeMarco Williams, I think, is hurt, if I remember right. And so that's the reason that one reason Chris Graves has been playing more. But, you know, they're going to have some guys step up. And getting somebody some experience against quality SEC teams is a really good way to do that.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me to see him kind of displayed prominently on the stat line. I didn't notice him in the game as much, but reports are that he played kind of in substitution for Zamari Walton and played well.
Yeah, he did. It definitely wasn't just a special teams thing. Like, I remember seeing him, but I don't remember, you know, if I saw him in situations where he just gave up tons of receptions or anything like that. I don't think that was the case, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see how much of a stranglehold Prince and Walton have over those two starting spots at cornerback, especially with Deshaun Gaddy.
The only
time I noticed him, he made a great break on a kind of a bad pass from Max Johnson and almost picked it. It was called a pick on the field, but he obviously kind of bobbled it or had to reposition his hands. But that's like the only time I really marked him against A&M. I don't know. He may have done great things that I missed, but yeah, it's kind of surprising that it didn't become sort of a three-man rotation at cornerback with, you know, as much hype as he had coming into the season as kind of like a Conference USA, you know, first teamer last year, I guess.
I agree. He didn't stick out, but looking back, if he played on the final drive where the defense had to get a stop and he was in and, you know, dropped a pick, that means he must have been playing a lot and we just didn't notice, because surely they didn't just go like, all right, this is the most pivotal point of the entire game. You guy who we don't trust, go on in there.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. It'd be cool to see him get a big pick this year after dropping that one, dropping one that he, you know, that would have, I think, ended the LSU game before they got to throw in the end zone twice.
Yeah, that would have been so crazy. A pick six at home to beat LSU would have just been nuts. But, you know, whatever. Like, just breaking up passes is good. I'm not going to criticize too much. I mean, Trey Washington dropped a pick.
Yeah, he did. I mean, that was, I think they were both pretty technically difficult interceptions. Yeah. That was like a bullet thrown to the sideline that he jumped. I don't know. He was right in front of where the receiver would have, you know, caught the ball.
Yeah.
Just a very difficult pass to hold on to. And it was a little bit high. You know, a lot of things made that difficult.
He was also sprinting towards it, which is hard on a bullet, you know.
Sure. Yeah. I would need about 150 tries to catch that same ball, I think.
What a cool play call that was. That was a corner blitz where he had responsibility for the receiver who had been theoretically covered by the corner who was blitzing. And so, of course, the hot read immediately is like, oh, there's a corner blitz, throw to the guy. And then just like, there's Trey Washington, right where he needs to be.
Yeah, that was, I think, a good call because the defensive calls at that point had let them have the easy 5-6 yard outs.
Right.
So I thought that was a good play to try to, you know, break up that trend.
Yeah. So overall, let's talk about the defense. So obviously the defense in the first quarter was spectacular. I think that A&M's first four possessions, they didn't score. Maybe they scored one touchdown in their first four possessions and no field goals. They did have the kick return for touchdown. But the defense really did well at the beginning of the game in terms of limiting the score. And then, you know, things got crazy and it looked like A&M sort of found some holes and that kind of things opened up a little bit. But you know what? Like, I think it's easy to look at the score. We give up 35 points to an A&M team that's not especially good, hasn't been prolific on offense or whatever. I think the defense actually played pretty well. It wasn't a great game by any means, but what I always, especially in Pete Golding's first year, what I will always judge a defense by is, are the players in position to succeed? And they were.
I think they absolutely have been in position to make plays for most of this year. I mean, the difference is, to me, night and day. They still got to get some guys. They got to get some linebackers. They have a decent core of senior defensive linemen this year that will be very difficult to effectively replace. So he has challenges ahead, but yeah, overall, just the defense looks a lot better in terms of being in position and not getting gashed in the run game and not giving up every third and long. I don't know. We've had some problems for sure, but in terms of realistic expectations for 1 year turnarounds, you really have to overall tip your hat to Golding and the individual players, you know?
Oh yeah. No, the defense has definitely exceeded any reasonable expectation for what it would be like just 1 year removed from last season. Gosh, like, it's funny because Alabama fans are still, you know, whenever Ole Miss gives up any points, Alabama fans are like, oh, this is a Pete Golding effect. It's like, all right, dude, like I don't think surely you understand what it's like to cheer for a team that doesn't have five stars at every position, you know? Like, sometimes it's just not going to work out. But, like, when it doesn't work out because the players aren't fast enough or, like, aren't quite skilled enough to be able to, you know, make that tremendous, huge play, but are instead just really, you know, very good players, but, you know, not future NFL first round picks. Like, that's okay. It's okay when just like a defense doesn't work because you were out talented and, you know, you couldn't really handle it. But we've seen so many times when a defense doesn't work just because like no one knew what to do on the field.
Yeah. Or they were just in a formation that put them at a schematic disadvantage for the situation, you know, that seems to be mostly gone and that's good. And, you know, Alabama fans, did they not remember when they would beat Ole Miss 55-3, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's very funny.
I've been really amazed with the whole Sunter and Perkins thing. You know, he plays, but he doesn't play more than other, you know, linebackers or whatever. Like, he's in the rotation. He's not a starter. And that's actually fine. I think that there are plenty of things about his game that show you that he has potential to be a superstar. There are times when he's on the field and you just go, like, how on earth did he close that gap so quickly and make the tackle? But he also loses players. You know, he struggles some in coverage at the moment. You know, it's clear that his head is swimming a little bit and he needs to gain weight. And so, like, I think that this team relying on a veteran defense makes sense, and that they're going to have a full off season where they can kind of get him to where they want him to be. And he has potential to blow up next year. And that's pretty great.
Absolutely. And I think Kari Coleman is an underrated significant contributor for this defense, and so is Jeremiah Jean-Baptiste. Those are, I mean, the two veteran players that are good enough to make it where he doesn't have to start.
Right.
And your point about him losing players, linebacker is, I don't know, it's kind of like playing tight end on offense. It's like a hybrid position. You have to be familiar with all the different run fits, but you also have to be somewhat competent in coverage. It's very difficult. And also to go from high school where he's playing not even at the, you know, kind of at the middle level, in Mississippi high school football, where he is the best athlete that he has ever seen,
like, right.
You know, to going to playing in the SEC, like he was the focal point of his team and he was the focal point of every opponent. So it's really just like adjusting from being the singular best player by a long shot, to having to fit in on a team and understand everything about the schemes and, you know, pass defense and run defense. Pretty difficult. But I think he's doing well, and I think he will be a superstar next year.
Yeah. I'll tell you another player. Obviously he had the blocked kick at the very end, or the tipped kick at the very end, that made the difference. But Xavien Harris has really come on. He's had a few games, maybe not a few games in a row, but I think three out of the past four games. Looking at the end of the game, you've gone like, oh, he really did make an impact. But in this game, he had seven tackles, which was tied for third on the team. He had one of those was for loss, and then he had the tipped field goal. And actually, I watched John Saunders' press conference yesterday, and he said that Xavien Harris also got a finger on an extra point earlier in the game. But then the extra point went in, because it was just an extra point. But that sort of like gave them some level of confidence that there was a decent chance that he'd be able to break through again.
Yeah, like what a phenomenal frame he has.
Yeah.
Just all the potential in the world. I felt like he kind of disappeared for a couple of games after having a crazy first one or two games. So it's good to see that, you know, he's coming back around and finding his stride against some of the best teams that we played.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that like you sort of alluded to, over the offseason, this team has a lot that it'll need to replace. It has a bunch of seniors on both sides of the line.
So much. It's scary.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, we've shown that a mixture of the portal can be useful. And also, I think that we have, you know, some promising backups. We don't have promising backups who you just go like, oh, it's that guy's turn. He's going to, you know, immediately be a wrecking ball or something like that. But I think that it's not like the cupboard is bare in terms of potential guys who can come off the bench and ultimately be a starter next year.
Yeah, I would agree. It is scary to have that much turnover, but Kiffin has thrived on high turnover situations pretty much every year that he's been here. He's never put a bad product on the field other than when the team just kind of fell apart at the end of last year. That's the really only time where Kiffin was just kind of doing a bad job.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we're bringing in what will be the best high school class Kiffin has ever brought in by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
You don't want to rely on those guys, but some of those guys will contribute. They absolutely will.
Right.
There's just so much turnover and they're bringing in so much talent. Some of those guys will be big players for us next year. There are, I'd say, a decent number of guys that we signed this year who haven't contributed a ton, who will be big next year. Aiden Williams, Kedrick Reese-Cano, Sunter and Perkins will be a full-time starter. And then like Chris Graves, and then the linebacker from Clemson, whose name escapes me, TJ Dudley. You could just basically count those guys as, you know, our incoming high school class, because they just didn't play much, you know, red shirted or close to it. We have a lot of those guys. I don't know. I think it'll be really interesting. It is a scary amount of turnover, but when you're led by Lane Kiffin. When you win, you know, we're probably going to win 10 games this regular season. You know, there's a lot of heat on the team right now. So I assume he'll be able to bring in another crop of very good transfer portal players. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. We actually are going to wrap up. I have a hard stop right now, but yeah, we will actually be talking probably more about the Georgia game. Are you up for another pod this week? Probably so, huh?
Oh yeah, dog.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, cool. Well, we'll talk at y'all later.